Episode 180 von Winter Day, Hockey O'Clock. Mike Hermo, Stürmer, HCB Südtirol, Alperia.
Was there ever a hit or a check that you regretted?
Yeah, I would say a few. I mean, even the last game at the end of the year, it was the hardest, one of the hardest times ever. Like standing, I didn't want to go out into the rink because, you know, it was full and I didn't even know where I was going to stand, and I didn't even want to see my teammates. Like I felt bad just, you know, for the 5-minute penalty too, right? Like these guys fight all year for us and for Chennai Championship, and, you know, to put them on the penalty kill for 5 minutes, it's not really fair. And you know, they typical, you know, Bolzano character, they fought back in that game and were able to crawl back, and you know, that's why I love these guys. And they, you know, they come in after the game or and I think it was the intermission and just said, hey, like, you know, don't worry about it, we got you, you know, and that, and you know, that means a lot to me, obviously.
Winter Day Hockey O'Clock.
I cannot tell you how much I've been looking forward to having this conversation. He is one of the very interesting guys the Winter Day Ice Hockey League can call its own. He has been a mainstay for Bolzano. He has been one of the heavy, if not the heaviest hitter in the league. He's also an incredibly skilled guy. And I'm going to find that out because I've only heard of it. A great teammate, an incredibly funny person, and basically the whole package. I've really been looking forward to having you on. It's, of course, Mike Hermo from Bolzano. Mike, so happy that you joined the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Mike, we're recording this conversation in the middle of preseason after a 10-0 exhibition game victory by the Foxes against Innsbruck. You didn't play in that game. We'll get to that a little bit later. On paper, this Bolzano squad looks incredible. What's your feeling as regards the team that's slowly but steadily coming together under the lead of Glenn Henlon this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's I think everyone's outlook this year is very positive. We had a training camp in the mountains in the Dolomites in Corvara, and I think we got along from the first day. The new guys fit right in. You know, Frankie and Frigo, the guys who've been here for a long time, have really built the culture in Bolzano of, you know, working hard and coming together also as a team and having fun too, right? And it's a big part of hockey to find that balance. And I think here in Bolzano, they've done a really good job of bringing guys along and showing the way here. And I think it's going to be an exciting year for the squad. We're very stacked up front. We've got some great D, and obviously two great hardworking goalies. So we're excited for the year. I know Glenn and the staff is too, and you know, it's a long year and obviously a lot of things happen, but it's something we look forward to.
You're heading into your sixth year in Bolzano. Granted, after your first year you went on a little hiatus and then returned, but it's become fairly uncommon that an import player returns to the Ice Hockey League again and again. And if you look at Bolzano, it's happening more often than not. Dustin Gaisley has been one of the mainstays on the team. Scotty Valentine is back for a third year. Brad McClure is back for a third year. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think just kind of what I talked about before is the culture that we've kind of created here. Guys love to play here. You know, we have a good mix, I think, between fun and hard work. And obviously, we've been a winning team the last little bit. And also just outside of the rink, there's so much to do here. Doesn't matter what season it is, you can always find something to do. And, you know, I think a lot of us, we enjoy the outdoors as well. And what Bolzano
offers us. Obviously, the management and everything has been good here for people to stick around. And you know, we've created just a great connection between all of our teammates. And you know, it's, I know a lot of people say it, but we've become a family these last few years, and we're chasing down a goal, obviously. And I don't think anyone really wants to leave until that goal's finished.
But then again, there are always new faces, as with every other league squad, that need to be kind of integrated. And you already talked about the Italian core led by Daniel Frank and Luca Frigo, but also the import player core, where you, of course, are part of. Is it a gimmick to assume that you and Dustin Gazy are big parts too in, quote unquote, onboarding players to the team, to the city, to the region?
Yeah, for sure. I think I hear from a lot of guys before they sign, because obviously I've been there for a while, and they want to know, you know, what it's like there and why I've been there so long. So we have some good conversations with some of the guys coming in, and you know, we kind of let them know how it is here. And obviously, we have some good imports this year, and we were pretty lucky and fortunate to get these guys. And yeah, now we're looking forward for the regular season.
I'll get to you and everything you're about in a bit, but one last question. When just looking at the roster, and I know we're recording this at the beginning of September, I know it will take a little more time until the real games are being played, actually 2 weeks as of this recording, and I know it's a long season, but just looking at the sheer firepower, especially offensively, this team has. I mean, you brought on Matt Bradley, who's been a 30 goal scorer in the league with Vienna. You brought on Braden Christopher, who was a 50 point scorer with Innsbruck a couple years ago. You brought on Adam Aluka, who scored 70 points 2 years ago for Innsbruck. Is this, again, on paper, and I know the real games haven't started yet, but is this the most firepower Bolzano's ever had while you were there?
Yeah, up front, we got an army up front for sure. it's pretty cool to watch. I think, you know, last night we obviously won 10-0, and it wasn't really about all the goals for us, I would say. I think the weekend, last weekend, we didn't have our best two games. It was our first two games of the year, obviously, but we didn't like how we played. And I think just the response in general, the way we played, obviously we scored a lot of goals last night, but it was just the way we played, you know, a lot hungrier and played with a lot more heart. And, you know, it's great to have so much offensive power, but it's how you use it, right? And you still have to do the right things. And that's a big part of Glennie's, the way Glennie preaches. And that's what we did last night. And I think if we can play the right way and do the right things, that we're going to score a lot of goals.
And just for all the fans out there who haven't maybe followed the offseason Bolzano has had as closely as others, there's Simon Burg, former Innsbruck player on D. Cole Holtz is back, one of the cornerstones of your finals run 2 years ago. There's the usual suspects on defense. There's still Sam Harvey, who got you into a game 7 in the semis against Salzburg last year, and game 7 in the finals 2 years ago. Again, on paper, looks really loaded. Really curious to find out what Bolzano will be all about this upcoming campaign. As much as the preparation goes, and I want to take you back to a year ago, Bolzano played a loaded schedule in exhibition. Bolzano played in the Champions Hockey League, and you never really got it going under the new regime that was in place at that time of the year. Niklas Sundblad only lasted, I think, 4 games until he was shown the door. What kind of difference does it make for the team to not have this incredibly loaded schedule and a quote unquote normal preseason?
Yeah, last year was a lot at the start of the year. I think coming off that game seven loss and then going right in the next season to a lot of games and a heavy schedule and obviously a new strategies and new ways of doing things. It was quite different for some guys. It obviously took us a while, obviously also too, just as a team to kind of mix in together. Last year maybe we had some of the best characters, like nice people in the dressing room, and it took us like I would say a couple of months to kind of get to know each other well and start fighting for each other. And that's, I think, when Bolzano does its best, when, you know, everyone's caring for each other and everyone's fighting for each other. And we found that later in the year, obviously Glennie came in and we felt a lot more comfortable with him, just the way his style is, and we were used to it before. So yeah, now this year it was, you know, we started a little bit later and we don't have a game every other day. So it's been a lot easier, I think, for the guys to prepare and kind of get comfortable and get to know each other better. So yeah, obviously we still have some games here ahead. We got a big weekend here, two games. I think we play Saturday, Sunday. So it's been good. I think now, you know, we overcame it's the jitters the first couple games and you kind of feel uncomfortable. And I think last night was a good turnaround for us. And hopefully we can just keep going on to the regular season now.
We're going to revert back and forth a little bit here, as last year's is still relatively fresh in the collective memory of Bolzano fans. And I vividly remember getting to Bolzano, I think, a day or two after Glenn Henlon had arrived for his second stint with the team. I was lucky enough to conduct an interview here with him, too, on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock. And he was fairly open about his summer and why it wasn't the right call to return to Bolzano immediately, but he was lucky enough to get the job opportunity at a later stage where he had to already dealt with some family matters. So I was just wondering what kinds of buttons or different buttons was Glenn Henlon pushing and then Niklas Sundblad, and why were you able to turn everything around under his tutelage?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, strategy-wise, he's very smart, but I think the thing that motivates the players is just he's a very real person, right? Like, he's very personal. He knows his players. He knows how his players work. But also, like, just when he talks, and sometimes he comes in the intermission and he'll say a speech or something, and it's, you know, I've had coaches for the last, you know, 8-10 years in pro where the speeches kind of wear off, you know, and you just kind of get numb to a speech. But, you know, when Glenn comes in, sometimes his voice is a little bit trembly, you know, like he when he's talking, he means what he's saying. And you can really feel that from him. And there's been a couple of speeches in the last couple of years where, like, you're so motivated. And, like, I sometimes leave the dressing room for intermission, like, feeling like, wow, like, I haven't felt like that in a long time. And you can just see that he cares, right? Like, there's no faking behind it. Like, it's real. And yeah, it's incredible. And it really, you really want to go out there and play, and you're really motivated. And yeah, I think that can be shared throughout the whole team.
I do share that sentiment, and I don't talk about that probably very often, but he's one of the very genuine coaches I've met over the past couple of years. He's incredibly funny. He's very intelligent and seems like a really good guy, especially when you listen to the players and everybody that was kind of touched by him, coached by him. Everybody seems to be raving about him. Former players, former players on his team. It's just an interesting guy, and I guess Bolzano should be very happy to have him back. You talked about the coaches that you've had in your pro career, especially over the last decade. You're heading into 1.5 decades of pro hockey. So that's an incredibly long and successful time that you've already spent playing the game. But when preparing for this conversation, I kind of went back a little bit and on an Ontario Hockey League prospect blog. I found a description of the player Mike Helmo. So almost 17, 18, 19 years later, I want to read this to you and then see how much of that still holds up and where your game and everything else might have evolved. It said on that blog, Helmo has always been one of the most feared hitters in the league. He's also been the type of player who constantly walks the line between clean and dirty, has seen his share of suspensions, and driven opposing fans to the point of anger. But if he's on your team, you love him. How does that description hold up in September of 2024?
It's a good question. I think, you know, growing up, that was just, it was always my style. You know, that's how I had fun. And it kind of carried me into pro hockey. I was fortunate to have a coach in the OHL that almost taught me everything about hockey. You know, I went into the OHL knowing absolutely nothing about, you know, the right way to play or strategy-wise how to play. And I was just a guy in, you know, minor hockey that just went around and hit guys and scored the odd goal. And this guy was able to kind of take my game to the next level. And I was able to play pro because of that. And when I went to, you know, the New York Islanders system, it was kind of the same way. They that's exactly how they wanted me to play. And I kind of developed my game like that throughout. And now I don't really know anywhere else to play. It's just kind of synced in my game, I guess. And like if I were to go out there and not try to play my physical or, you know, on the line kind of game, I wouldn't be the player I am or as effective as I am. I think like playing hard and physical and kind of being that edgy player goes along also with scoring goals and being offensive too. I think it goes hand in hand. It's just, you know, that's how I'm on my game. And hopefully this 2024 season is the same description as you just read.
The coach you were referring to is obviously Mark Reeds. He coached you in juniors for 3 years, and you had a brief stint with Greg Ireland, whom you'd see again a couple years later in the pros. But when you talk about he taught you playing the game the right way, and I know it more often than not maybe sounds cliche to a lot of listeners, but this podcast is also here to kind of dissect cliches and show them that not even one grain of truth, but the grains of truth, they're usually in it. How did he teach you? What did he show you when it came to playing the game the right way?
Yeah, that's a good question. Just so many things. First of all, he was a guy playing in the NHL, but he was, you know, a third, fourth liner, and he had to fight his way there and fight for a career. And just such an intelligent and smart coach. Even things just like picking pucks off the wall or, you know, using the net, and it's just so many little things that like when I was young and watching him and listening to him teach, like it would have never occurred to me some of the stuff he taught. And he had sometimes a funny way of getting through to guys. He would embarrass you. He would skate circles around you in practice and blow the whistle about 100 times if you screwed up in practice. And it would be funny as long as you weren't the guy that day. I was the guy a couple times, and I remember it like yesterday. But you know, also it's how you grow as a person, and it's how you grow as a player too. It's, you know, there's different ways of learning. I'm sure it's not like that as much anymore, but yeah, sometimes you need it, right? You need to go through a little bit of a humbling experience. And he was great for that. And you know, every year I was with him, I got so much better. I call the OHL like my own sound career, like a university of hockey, because every day was just, I felt like I was learning so much. And you know, obviously, like I would like to say the effort and the will was there. And he was able to just kind of
to guide me through it. And then obviously I got Greg Ireland there in the last year, my last year, and he played me. I think I play would play like 30 minutes a game and just kind of catapulted me into a professional career.
It's just so interesting who leads you on which paths and where and how you eventually end up playing pro hockey. We might be digging a little deeper, but when we're talking about paths that we're on, obviously we're meeting a lot of people in, I tend to call it planet or on planet hockey, as I tend to call it. And one of those people that you and I mutually would call a friend is your former captain, Anton Bernard. And I always like it when great players talk about other great players. And of course, in preparations of this talk, I got in touch with Anton and asked him, hey, Anton, is there anything the world needs to know about Mike Helmo? And he said, there are lots of things. And he came back with a story that I want to play to you. That I want to listen in with you and then want to talk about you with. This is Anton Bernard on the great Mike Helmo.
Hello, everyone. Martin, good job for finally getting Helms on the podcast. I think he has a lot of good stories and some valuable content to share with everyone here. You asked me to tell a story about Helms, and I'm not a great storyteller, but let me do some background first. Mike was someone who integrated very quickly, not just into the Bolzano hockey family when he first got here, but obviously also into the society around Epan, where most of the players live. He was, for example, helping the tenants where he lived with the farm, with harvesting grapes, riding the tractor. He was making friends outside of hockey, and not just sitting around playing video games all day. And pretty much a great character guy that most of the hockey fans in Austria couldn't probably imagine, because they know him for his goals, for his physical style of play. But behind all of that is actually a smart person who is very valuable in the locker room. Actually, one of my favorite teammates of all time. He would be going around the locker room, listening everywhere, making jokes, chirping guys, and a great teammate on and off the ice. So here's the story. 4 years ago for Secret Santa, where basically every player picks a number out of a hat and gets a funny present for the other player. Then at Christmas Day, we usually put them all in a shopping cart, and one by one, each player picks his present. And Helms was obviously last that year because his present wouldn't fit in the shopping cart. Yeah. Now you have to remember that he was helping on the farm, and sometimes as a funny word around the guys, we would say the name Stollo, which is actually someone who helps in the barn and gets his hands dirty. And one of the younger players he was really close with always called him Stollo. So he got him this blue skirt that farmers always wear with the name Helmo on it and number one Stollo, and a really funny red hat. So he put those on first, and then it was time for the real gift. It was outside of the locker room, and we heard some funny noises, and our trainer, he actually brought it in, and it was a real pig on a leash. Not a small pig, a cute one. It was actually a big one. And so Helms, that was his present. He got it, and he was walking around the locker room with it. Number one Stollo, Mike Helms. Pretty funny story, and actually our trainer said he never saw anything like it. His favorite Secret Santa gift of all time. And I agree, this was one of the funniest moments we had together. And then obviously we shared many more moments together, winning a championship, nights out, having fun on the bus, on the road trips. Therefore, I wish you all the best for the season with the Foxes. Best of luck. I'll be watching you guys, and good luck.
A tremendous story. And what Anton also did, he sent along a picture that's obviously proof of the story. And I wanted to ask it or ask you the question first. Is the world ready to see the picture, or shall I hold it back? Because in conjunction with the appearance of this podcast, I might be enticed to post the photo to obviously generate more clicks and listens and whatnot. But you'd have to agree to that first.
Yeah, of course. I know the picture. It's a great picture. So please do.
The story is incredible. When I saw a pig, and I know the Bolzano locker rooms, and you and the pig, I was like, what is this? And the story about it reached me a little later. So when everything was put in context by Anton, it kind of made sense, but it's still one of the weirder occurrences I've ever been part of. How do you look back on that day and that story?
Yeah, like, not only the gift was good, but just the delivery of it. So Simon Pichler is the guy who got it for me, and we were really close. We drove all the time together, and we spent a lot of time together. And so in Bolzano, we picked the Secret Santa numbers pretty early, so guys have a lot of time to think and prepare. And every year, it's a pretty good time. It's guys put a lot of time into it, and they care, and it makes it a great day. But he had bought the pig probably a month ago and was feeding it and taking care of it, and I had obviously no idea. And then I was the last guy to go, and there was no gift there, right? So I was thinking, it's happened before where the numbers got screwed up and, you know, I didn't get a gift, and I was like, oh, here we go again, you know? But the whole gang was just kind of like sitting together, like smirking, laughing. And so you knew something was up. You know, I started reading the note and getting all these kind of side gifts. And then all of a sudden you can just hear this pig squealing. And, I still don't really know what's going on. I look behind, and our trainer Ryan, he has this big pig on a rope on a leash, and I was not embarrassed, but just like in shock, and you could tell everyone knew what was going on except me. And it was definitely a Secret Santa to remember, and a great job all around by Simon to make that all happen. I think he drove like 2 hours to go get it and put it in a crate and bring it. So yeah, it was a funny time.
And he took care of it for a month. I wouldn't be able to take care of a pig for probably a day, not even a week, and he did it for a month. So hats off on that. Anton, in his story, called you a Stoller, as it's obviously the case in South Tyrol. I'd probably translate it to farmhand or just farm laborer, I guess. How did you become a Stoller? Why did you help out on the farm, a farm around you?
Yeah, I guess just the experience, right? Like where we live, there's vineyards everywhere and apple orchards. And like for me, it's kind of new, you know, where I come from. I come from a city, and you know, it's flat, and you come here and there's mountains everywhere and vineyards, and obviously a lot of people are invested in those, and you know, your neighbor or a lot of people you talk to are, you know, they either own a vineyard or work for it or something like that. And, you know, I just thought it'd be something cool and something cool to learn, you know, and obviously, and help people out too at the same time. And it's cool that the culture here with the wine and the grapes and also the apples too. It's a pretty unique place. And for me, it was fun. I think now every year we help our the wine tenants out and to pick the grapes and for a day, and then, you know, we have a meal after, and it's a pretty cool experience, and it's a good time to bond as well. And it's obviously now it's an ongoing joke, and you know, I accept it and I like it, but it's cool to learn something new as well, right? And and that's kind of how I live life.
Before we get back to serious hockey talk. What has happened to the pig? Is it still around or has it already become some kind of bacon?
Actually, that's what I named the pig. I named it Specky. it did go to pig heaven. The plan was to actually, I wonder if there's a picture of how big it was, because it got even, like, I think it was, I can't remember the weight, but it was absolutely massive. The friend who got it to me took it to his uncle's who owns the farm and took care of him there, but it was massive. And the plan was to have a grill at the end of the year, but that was COVID year, so that we couldn't really get together in numbers outside the rink, unfortunately. So the uncle took it with the rest of them and made some speck out of it later, I think, the next year or so.
Just out of curiosity, because your pronunciation of Specky and Speck was immaculate. You're living in a bilingual region, and I'm always impressed when people in South Tyrol seamlessly switch from English to German to Italian, and some of them are from a valley where they have even another language like Ladinic or Ladinish. Just incredibly impressive. But have you ever thought about adding one of the two languages to your repertoire, or is it as with nowadays all the other league cities where English gets you through everywhere?
Yeah, so when I first came here, I started to try to learn the German dialect almost right away. It took me a long time. I'm still not great, but I know enough to get around and to talk to people. Sometimes I have to ask them to repeat it a few times, but I would say, like, I feel comfortable enough to talk to people and engage with conversations in the dialect. I told my Italian friends, like my best friend Johnny Vellini and also Luca Frigo, that I would learn Italian this year, which I've started, and it's just being around it for 6 or 7 years, you can kind of pick it up, and it's not, you know, you're not kind of really starting from ground zero. Also Ming Lorenzi helps me a lot too. He doesn't really like to speak English, so in the end that helps, you know, and it's a good way to learn, and he knows that as well. But you know, the good thing about this area is, like, I'm not too shy to speak like German to someone, because there's so many languages going around, and like not everyone is, you know, 100% in every language. So if you make a mistake, it's not only me who's making mistakes around here too, right? So if I speak in German, they think, oh, maybe he's just an Italian guy that doesn't know German that well, or, you know, it's pretty easy going with the languages here. So no, but every day, you know, I want to keep obviously learning the languages here. I think it's, you know, while you're here, you might as well try to pick it up, and it's always around. So English gets you anywhere here too, but you know, I've been here for it's my 6th year now, so it'd be nice to come out with you know, learning a different language and or two.
In other words, we could have conducted this interview in German too.
That might be a little bit too schwierig for me.
But it seems as if you're getting there. I want to go back to what Anton said one last time, and the line that kind of struck me, coming from an all-time Bolzano great. He's probably one of my favorite teammates of all time. And knowing Anton and just how great a character he is, he doesn't say that lightly, or because someone wants or needs to hear it. It does come, or knowing him, or thinking that I'm knowing him, it does come from his heart. And I always wonder, how does it make you feel when you hear something like this from a player this great?
Yeah, I mean, what a great feeling, right? I mean, if you look at Anton's career and just who he is as a person, I had the awesome opportunity to sit by him in the locker room. And, you know, a guy who comes in every day, works hard, works his bag off, and also was a great player, right? Like, you watch him play, just super smart. And, like, sometimes the things he did, I would just think to myself, like, where did he learn that? You know, like, how did he learn to do that? And, you know, I obviously would have loved to play with him a few more years, but he's also a smart guy. You know, like, he went right into another career, and just he's got three kids now, and it's great. Sometimes I run into him in that pond where we live, and always smiling and seems happy with everything. And obviously it was a pleasure to win a championship with him. And obviously I got to play with his brother too. Been over to his family's for a lunch or two, and just a great family in general. You can obviously tell why the kids are so good. They have great parents, and it's very meaningful coming from a guy like that, and also great looking guy. I think everyone knows that around here too. So,
just imagine being the one on TV standing next to Anton. Doesn't matter how good looking you are, you're automatically the uglier one. So, I mean, you're preaching to the choir, as I've had the good fortune, or as I've been the lucky bastard who enjoyed doing commentary next to Anton. And I've never seen anyone who's a natural as he was. He was basically thrown into the booth and basically thrown into a TV studio, and he was good from the get-go. Normally it takes you some time to understand the TV business and how certain things are working. Anton didn't need that. So on and off the ice, quite literally a natural, and really happy to still have him on our TV team. Maybe if your German keeps improving, we'll have a reunion in a TV booth or in a commentary booth. Something that might entice you for a career after your career?
Yeah, could be. If it's with Anton and you, and maybe we could get something going.
We'll try to set some things up, but first of all, we hope that you'll have a long and successful playing career. And I want to get back to the playing career, and obviously that description that I read out a little earlier, where it said you constantly walk the line between clean and dirty. And I described you as a heavy hitter. And naturally, in a contact sport like hockey, there's a fine line between a good hit and a hit that maybe took it a little too far. And you've been on both sides of that line. But maybe let's talk about the evolution of you becoming a heavy hitter first. How did it come all about? At what point did you get the feeling, I know how to hit?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I ever since day one of playing hockey, it's kind of how it was. Just like the timing and knowing when the guy's gonna cut in the middle, and it was like probably my number one strength, maybe I guess you could say, like in hockey growing up. I had in minor hockey, I played with a guy named Mike Latta, who he played for Washington a little bit. He was one of my best friends growing up. We played hockey every year together. We were born, 10 days apart, and we were very close. And he, although we were the same age, he was kind of the guide for me. We both played super hard, and he was heavier, like one of the heavier guys growing up, and we had some fun together, and we were just, I don't know, like he just kind of brought that animal out of me and showed me that way. I remember like we would play like summer hockey tournaments, and we go for the handshake at the end of the game, and he'd be pissed at someone. He'd tell me, hey, be ready. Like something's gonna happen here. I'm like, Mike, like, come on, the game's over. It's like, no, be ready. So it just kind of developed from there. And going back to Mike Latta, like he was a big part of my career as well. He was obviously always a step ahead of me. When I was playing junior B, he was in the OHL, and then obviously he was in the NHL before me, and played like a great career in the American League also, and the NHL. And he'd always come to check in on me, and if we played against each other, he'd tell me things. And obviously he was a big part of my career as well. But I would say like playing with him at the start just got in minor hockey just kind of sparked that physicality out of me, and it kind of just kept going into pro, obviously. And I think obviously playing in that time back in North America, where physicality was a little bit more lenient and a little bit more different, obviously it's changed. Hockey in general's changed, and you know, I've had to adapt or at least try to adapt. And yeah, sometimes obviously it's over the line, and something there's some been obviously some times that I've regretted and I'm not happy and we're proud of. But I mean, you just got to keep going and, you know, and learn from it.
Let's maybe stick with the regret and then turn it into something positive. And maybe, as you've already alluded to, how you adapted. Was there ever a hit or a check that you regretted?
Yeah, I would say a few. I mean, even last year, the last game at the end of the year, it was the hardest. One of the hardest times ever, like standing, I didn't want to go out into the rink because, you know, it was full and I didn't even know where I was going to stand. And I didn't even want to see my teammates. Like I felt bad just, you know, for the 5-minute penalty too, right? Like these guys fight all year for us and for trying to win a championship, and, you know, to put them on the penalty kill for 5 minutes, it's not really fair. And, you know, they, typical, you know, Bolzano character, they fought back in that game and were able to crawl back. And you know, that's why I love these guys. And you know, they come in after the game, or and I think it was the intermission, and just said, hey, like, you know, don't worry about it, we got you, you know, and that, and you know, that means a lot to me, obviously. But yeah, like that would be one for sure that I regret. And you know, now this year, I can't play the first 3 games, which sucks. And you know, obviously I want to be out with my teammates.
We're obviously talking about the hit against Jay Ganaway. It's one of a couple of hits that netted you a suspension in the Winterday Ice Hockey League. And when we're talking about hits, what constitutes for you a good, maybe even a great hit? And where's that fine line between a great clean hit and maybe a dirty, reckless hit? How do you try to define and walk that line?
Well, I don't even know. To be honest, I try not to hit in general anymore. Like unless they see you coming and they're ready for it, then you know, then it's for me, I say, okay, it's okay. But then at that point when they see you coming and you know, you're a little bit, you know, delayed, I guess, nothing really comes of it anyway. So I guess, you know, it still happens, and you know, sometimes I get a frustrated, I guess you could say. But you know, I think now it's better just to use your stick and angle them off. And you know, there's times obviously where you're gonna hit the guy, but you know, it's just so risky nowadays, you know, whether the guy moves or you know, puts his head down or reaches out for a puck. It's like, at the end of the day, like, you know, is it worth the suspension to or not, just to make like a one hit? Does it make a big difference in the game? That's kind of what you have to tell yourself now these days. And you know, I want to play games and obviously don't want to take penalties. And obviously it happens and it can happen, but, you know, you just have to be a little bit more smart about it.
The evolution of the game of hockey is so interesting. I've talked to numerous people, and this discussion kind of always flares up when there are suspensions being handed out or no suspensions for a big hit. And, this doesn't only come from old-timers, but also from people who started playing the sport maybe 10, 15 years ago. A lot of them said there's this kind of illness or malady going around that people, for whatever reason, start ducking towards the boards when a hit is imminent, which makes them even more brutal than initially intended. And then that a lot of people don't know how to take a hit anymore and take a check. Has that indeed changed over the course of the years? How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up in my era or in past eras, you know, you put yourself in spots where, you know, if you're going to get hit, you're going to be okay, right? And I think now that the game's so fast and, you know, there's not as much physicality even growing up, that guys get more comfortable full playing, and you know, they're not expected to get hit in some moments, right? And that just carries on through to now, I guess. And yeah, like if you look at some of the guys like my age, or you know, the guys who grew up, like, look how many times they, how hard they've been hit. Like, you know, there's obviously both sides to it, right? Like, one, giving a hit, like, are you in the right position to give a hit? And as the receiver, like, is he, you know, making the best options to protect himself, right? Like, is he reaching for a puck when a guy's coming to hit him? You know, is he turning when a guy's coming to hit him? Like, those are, I guess, gray areas of the game. And I think they always will be.
You're not only one who dishes out punishment, to use a figure of speech. It also netted you a handful of suspensions in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, just some most recent ones in April 21, four games because of a hit against Ali Vukovic. In January of 2023, five games against or because of a hit against Fejervars Nielsen. Then last year, the hit against Genoway, another three-game suspension. You've been a repeat offender for the Department of Player Safety. So every time, it seems, when you're raising your pinky finger, people are screaming for a suspension. I want to get to the adaptation process in a bit, but you've also been someone who got a lot of punishment from other players. I at least found two instances where you were hit so heavily and badly that it netted other players suspensions. Ryan Stoa, I think, in American Hockey League. Rafael Rotter in Winter Day Ice Hockey League. And maybe that's something for a lot of those people who can't take or don't know how to take hits anymore. How do you prepare mentally and physically to take on punishment that others are dishing out?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's part of the game, right? Like, you can get frustrated during the game, or, you know, things happen and you have to learn to deal with it. Sometimes it's hard, obviously. And, you know, sometimes things don't go your way. And, you know, I've obviously been on the side where, you know, I haven't reacted maybe the best I could have. But, yeah, it's, at the end of the day, it's hockey and it's sport, and, you know, things happen and you have to be able to adjust and learn from it and come out on top. And yeah, going into this year, it's the same mindset I have to have.
Has anyone ever really succeeded in getting under your skin?
Well, not really. Like, I like when guys, you know, engage. It gets me going, and I think I play better. I also respect it. Like, you know, if there's some good chirps, you're a guy, you know, trying to, like, not just me in general, but, like, going after guys, like, kind of makes me laugh, or, you know, like, I enjoy that part of the game. But really, I'm not really. I know, like, going back to my friend Mike Latta, like, when we play against each other in, like, the OHL and stuff, like, he would be, like, when I played minor hockey, like, my mom would sometimes yell at me from the fans, like, Mikey. So, like, when I would play against Mike, like, in warm-ups, or, like, if he was on the bench during games, he'd be yelling, like, Mikey. And, like, that would, honestly, that would probably upset me, like, frustrate me the most, because he knows exactly what he was doing. And, for him, you know, he was playing, like, that time he was playing, like, first line, and, you know, he could kind of do whatever he wanted to do. And I was, like, that fourth line guy just trying to, like, break into the league, you know, and guys are asking me, like, why does he keep saying that? I'm like, you know, don't worry about it. Don't worry. So, yeah, honestly, that got to me a lot. But, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing. It's just funny, like, growing up and having that bond with him as well.
And we started a conversation with me reading that OHL prospect blog description, you being a player who constantly walks the line between clean and dirty, heavy hitter, has seen his share of suspensions, driven opposing fans to the point of anger. You said it's probably still true. And then again, we talked about the process of adapting your game to the modern hockey and the modern way of how it's officiated. When did that process start, and where is it right now? Have you fully adapted, and are you pulling back at times now where you wouldn't have, like, 3, 2, 5, 7 years ago?
Yeah, I would say for sure. Like, there's so many times where I'm like, okay, here we go, here we go. And then I'm like, like he's not looking, or he's watching his pass, or whatever. And I just kind of back away. I mean, also too, like I'm not as fast as I used to be either, right? So that's another issue as well, is where you go to hit someone and the puck's gone, or you're not exactly in the right time frame to hit the person. So that's another thing of it too, obviously. But yeah, like it's definitely obviously a different game now, and which is fine. Like obviously hockey's grown and it's gotten a lot better all over the world, I think. And I think they've done a great job of advertising hockey and developing and making it more popular. And that's obviously a good thing, right? So I think hockey's going in a great direction. You can even see it here in South Tyrol and play like different places in Europe now. So it's great for hockey.
We also started out by talking about the exhibition game against Innsbruck. Obviously, a couple more to follow. You were held out that game also, Anthony Salinitri. So that again goes into the firepower that's still on the bench and will eventually be added to the squad too. When can Bolzano fans expect you back on the ice, and what's currently bugging you?
Yeah, so I suffered an injury last year. I took some time off and then came back, I guess, maybe a little bit too early. And yeah, all through near the end of the season and playoffs, it was just lingering, and it didn't get better. So I just kind of, it got worse during playoffs, obviously, and then it took all summer to heal, and it's getting better slowly. Still now, like I've just started getting on the ice and skating. The physio and the trainer, the athletic trainer here, is they've done a great job with me. It's been a joy. Some days I go to the rink not mentally at my best, and Daniel Peruzzo, he's our workout trainer, and he's done just a phenomenal job with me. He truly cares and believes, and on those days you go to the rink where you're not mentally at your best, right? Like you're not very optimistic about what's to come, and he's there to make sure everything's okay, and to push you as well. And that's obviously been big for me. I've been doing treatment and stuff. They've been taking good care of me since I got here, and which helps goes a long way. And you see your team practicing, and you want to be out there with them. It's tough to be patient. Enrico Migliorenzi, he's kind of going through the same thing as me right now. So we've been spending some time together, and he motivates me as well. You go to the gym and this guy's working his bag off to come back. I mean, he's the same age as me, and he went through surgery this summer, and you can tell he wants to come back at his age. And it's pretty motivating to see a guy show up every day and work hard like that just to come back and be with the group we have, right? So for a timeline, yeah, that's something I just been kind of taking day to day. I'm not really sure sh too sure when I'll come back. I hope soon. Obviously, with this the 3-game suspension, it still gives me a little bit of time. But yeah, I would say, I mean, take it day by day, week by week, and see. But I hope so. I hope soon.
Before we hit the record button for this conversation, we talked briefly off the records, and you said you've been blessed not having had a serious injury before, or a long-term injury, or an injury with maybe an uncertain window of return. How has this process, mind you, you're heading into your age 34 season, you're 33 right now, you won't be turning 34 until May next year. But how has this process been mentally for you at this later stage of your career, having to deal with an injury of this kind for the very first time?
Yeah, it's I guess you don't really understand it until you've been through it. You see guys who've gone through it or talk about it, and I guess you don't really understand it until you've been through it yourself. It's very challenging, right? Like one, you have to stay patient, and two, you have to stay positive. And, you know, there's times of summer where I get up, but I go to do my, you know, my rehab workouts or something, and I can feel something. And like, there's a couple times this summer where I went down, you know, to the basement just to do my like regular rehab stuff. And, you know, you're not feeling that good that day. And you feel something in your body that's not right. And like, I would just, there was a couple times this year where I just stopped doing it. I just go up and say, that's enough for today. You know, like, well, I don't even know what's to come. Like, you know, why even bother doing this? And then, you know, there's the next day where you feel good and you're like super motivated. So it's such a roller coaster of thoughts of emotions. And it's tough because, you know, mentally I still feel good. I still want to play. Like I said before, we have a goal that we want to accomplish. This team, you know, the guys that have been here and been working the last few years. So you want to be a part of that, and I want to be a part of that. And I want to, you know, finish my career on a high note. And, you know, these guys deserve a championship. They've put the work in, and they're great guys. And that's the goal. And that's what kind of keeps me driven to getting healthy again and coming back and winning with these guys.
Obviously, a lot of people in Bolzano really pulling for you, hoping to see you on the ice sooner rather than later, but please get back to 100% first. And when you're at that 100%, eventually you'll see Salzburg again. And that's the question to round out this conversation. You got oh so close 2 years ago when you got Salzburg and forced them into a game seven in the finals. You forced them into a game seven in the semis. We're talking about the team that's three-peated and attempting to win the trophy for a fourth consecutive time. You've been so close in beating Salzburg. One might argue one or two puck bounces to go the other way, and Bolzano hoists the trophy 2 years ago, and Bolzano advances to the finals last year. What does it take for Bolzano to get over the Salzburg hump?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Salzburg's a great team, and it's been, the games we play against each other, it's been quite a battle, you know. And also, what a great thing for this league in hockey, you know. I remember the year we lost to them, and 2 years ago, I guess, in game seven. And, you know, you'd speak to the fans after, and you know, obviously they're disappointed, but proud of us. And, but they were more just like happy about the level of hockey, right? Like how good those games were and like how intense they were. And I think, I guess when you're playing, you're not really thinking that, right? Like you're just going out there and trying to win a game. But as a viewer's perspective, like, now I go back and think about it, and you're like, wow, those were like, imagine being a fan at those games, like how good that is for the league and the people watching, right? And I think that's really cool for this league and for the viewers too. So in terms of getting over the Salzburg hump, you know, like every game with that, it's an inch of this and, you know, a couple bounces. And obviously we're building a team to win a championship, and you know, we're going to face them for sure. And they're a great team. And I think just takes that extra step, you know, whether it's a bounce or, you know, a little bit more detail in practice, or, you know, that coming together. And, you know, obviously we have the pieces to put together a good run this year. And, you know, we've gone through a lot the last 2 years, you know, adversity and ups and downs and, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I just think it's building something to a big story. So I'm excited for the year, and let's see what happens.
I 100% second that sentiment. If there's Salzburg Bolzano part three, sign me up for it. It's been tremendous for the sport the past 2 years. If there's a third series you guys would be having with Salzburg, I'm all in for it. But first, you need to get healthy. Wishing you all the best for the recovery process. Looking forward to seeing you back on the ice. Wishing you nothing but the best, and promise that this wasn't the last time that you graced Win Today Hockey O'Clock with your appearance.
Thank you so much.
Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move. Oh, it's gone. Oh, what a goal. It doesn't get any better than this.